Well, this friend of mine rang me on Friday night. Would you be able to preach on Sunday? Brian asked. Well, I think there was a sound of reluctance in my response as I reminded him that I was actually rostered to preach in a couple of weeks anyway. Why do you want me to preach? I asked him. Well, I've been to the doctors today, this is Friday, mind you, and I've been told I have to have urgent surgery, he said. And right now I don't think I have the emotional reserves for preaching. Okay, well, sure, I said. I'll do it for you. What's the topic? We were made to last forever. Well, Brian and I had a little ironic laugh about that at the time. A couple of years ago, I wrote an article that began, "Surgery happens when you are planning to do something else." As Jane Austen might say, this is a truth universally acknowledged. We are usually reminded of our own mortality when we least expect it. Everything's going along fine, and then your local GP has this grim face and is asking you whether you're planning to do anything important next week. Well, I'm always planning to do something important next week, I can tell you. But although my story is not quite as dramatic as Dick's, there was an incident a couple of years ago when my appendix decided to erupt after having been perfectly well behaved for 55 years. Somehow, when that happened, next week's plans took on suddenly diminished importance. And the surgeon who removed what was left of my offending appendix and vacuumed it, well, I won't go into that, later told me it was a bad one. And from that, I think I was intended to receive the impression that this doctor, a true impresario of the intestine, I can say, had delivered me from certain death. However, since I'm completely stupid about assessing dangers to my own mortality, I passed this off as the surgeon trying to convince me that his four-figure invoice was money well spent. Until a week or two later, while having my scars checked over by the droll Dr. Tay at the Bayswater Medical Centre, he said, "Oh, well, you could have died." Hello? Could have died? You mean like, could have died? I pretty much decided that I was real glad I hadn't died. In fact, I was real glad to be alive rather than dead. And furthermore, I realised I didn't want to die. I didn't want to die a lot. Now, at this point, I had a theological problem. Because I'm a Christian. This may be news to some of you. But as a Christian, I believe in heaven. I believe in heaven. I've been singing songs about heaven since I was just a little devil. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are all laid up somewhere beyond the blue. And some glad morning when this life is over, I'll fly away. And from Alexander's, when the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there. Yeah, I'll be there, screaming and kicking, I'll be there, I'll tell you. When that roll's called up yonder, I want leave. Down yonder, at the beach. Come on, let's admit it, none of us wants to die. Living's cool. We want to live. There's this story about a court jester in the time of Ali Baba and the 40 thieves who got sentenced to death by the caliph. For a long time, the court jester had entertained everybody in the caliph's court at Baghdad by keeping them amused whenever he was called upon to cheer them up. But in one moment of thoughtlessness, he told a joke that displeased the ruler, and the caliph had sentenced him to death. However, said the caliph, in consideration of the merry jests you've told us all these years, I will let you choose how you are to die. Oh, most generous caliph, replied the jester. If it's all the same to you, I choose death by old age. Now, here's the theological question. If we are meant for heaven, why do we cling so much to life? If we are meant for heaven, why do we cling so much to life? Well, I think the answer has less to do with the wondrous way that God has made us than it has to do with our own limited ability to think beyond our own imaginings. Because the truth is that we are made to last forever. We are made for eternity. Indeed, Ecclesiastes 3:11 that Sue read to us says, He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men. God has set eternity in each of our hearts. He's made us in such a way that deep down, in the depths of our hearts, in the centre of our self-awareness, in that place in our mind that constitutes our real, true selves, we understand ourselves to be eternal beings. It's all right, it's Les's car, he's going to fix it. We understand ourselves to be eternal beings. In the depths of our being, that's our experience. So no wonder we don't want to die, because dying is wrong. We're eternal beings. God made us that way, and we know it in our hearts. We have an inborn instinct that longs for immortality. Now, we're preaching these few weeks over out of this book that Rick Warren has produced that a number of us have met. In fact, I think it was Peter that introduced this to me, and I went through it. It's a program of 40 days. 40 days, is it? Where you have a devotion each day. And it's a great grounding in the Christian faith and in the meaning of life. And in this book, The Purpose-Driven Life, Rick says, "This is because God designed you in his image to live for eternity. Even though we know everyone eventually dies, death always seems unnatural and unfair. The reason we feel we should live forever is that God wired our brains with that desire." God wired us forever. So, despite our self-beliefs to the contrary, human beings are not very rational beings. We live on our emotions and our perceptions, even though we try to convince ourselves that it's actually our intellect and our fine judgment ability that gets us through. But as the writer of Ecclesiastes points out, he has set eternity in the hearts of men. The next part of the verse says, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. God has set eternity in our hearts, but we can't work it out. Even though a loving God has put this notion of eternity in our hearts, we cannot work out what it means. Instead of trying to grasp the wisdom of God, we rely on our own resources. And the key idea here, I think, is that since we are in a time-bound and finite world, that's our experience, a world that has a beginning and an end, and this is all we know from our own resources, we try to squeeze the idea of eternity into that framework. Well, it doesn't work. It's just wrong. When we try to squeeze God's universe into our universe, we end up with phrases like the title of today's talk, which is, "We were made to live forever." And the idea we carry around in our heads when we talk about forever, when we think about forever, is this idea of time rolling on, day after day, never ending. But you see, that's not eternity. That's not eternity. That's just more and more time. And God doesn't live in time. God lives beyond time. If we keep our brains stuck in the human universe, we'll be saying things like, God is the same today, yesterday, today, tomorrow, which is true as long as you live in a universe that has time, that has a yesterday, a today and a tomorrow. But eternity is something else again. Eternity is beyond time. In heaven, there's no yesterday, no today, no tomorrow. Time is a human dimension, and eternity is a heavenly dimension. So someone may ask, well, if I go to heaven after I die, where was I before I was born? Well, the answer is that the idea of before and after is only a valid idea on earth. The problem with the question are these two words, before and after. In heaven, there's no such thing as before and after. There's just eternity. Okay, I can see your brain starting to smoke at this point. So let's have a look at 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1, that Sandy read to us. Now, we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven, not built by human hands. See how the Bible describes the difference between earthly life and heavenly existence. In the first place, the earthly body is simply a tent. Now, we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed. Something temporary, something to be folded up and stuck in the boot when we go off to heaven. Not just a building in heaven, but an eternal house. Now we know that if the earthly tent we live in is destroyed, we have a building from God. That's better than a tent, right? An eternal house in heaven. we just try to convince us, and just to try to convince us that we're thinking in human terms, Paul adds, not built by human hands. Not built by human hands. So we have a tent here on earth, but in heaven we have a building, something much more substantial, an eternal house, not built by human hands. The challenge as I see it, and the challenge as I experience it, I have to say, is to keep trying to think in God's terms and not in my own terms. This is why every Christian should be a theologian. Now, theology is just the act of thinking about God or thinking about the way God thinks. And the more we try to get into the mind of God, the more we get a perspective on our tent-like existence here on earth. Rick Warren says in the book, "What is it going to be like in eternity with God? Frankly, the capacity of our brains cannot handle the wonder and greatness of heaven. It would be like trying to describe the internet to an ant." Or actually, probably trying to describe the internet to your aunt. It's just about as hard. What do you mean, click? It's futile, right? Words have not been invented that could possibly convey the experience of eternity. 1 Corinthians 2:9 says, "No eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love him." And the next verse says, "But God has revealed it to us by his Spirit." And for one or two of us, like Dick, he's allowed a glimpse. Yes, God has planted the idea of eternity in our hearts. We know in our hearts that we're created for something beyond this life. When we spent 9 months in our mother's womb, I'll bet we thought it was the whole universe. And when she started to push me out, I think I was probably a bit resentful and probably quite afraid. From the warmth and security of the womb into this harsh, cold, bottom-slapping world. "No thanks. Can I go back, please? I was happy where I was." But birth and death are not options. And just as birth is not a beginning, death is not an end. God offers us an opportunity beyond our lifetime. And Rick Warren in the book makes the point that since we know this, since we know that eternity exists, we can begin to live now in the light of that knowledge. If this life we know on earth were all there is, then it wouldn't matter what we did. But life on earth has eternal consequences. We live surrounded by people who don't get this. They live life for themselves. They try to cram their lives full of self-centered pleasures because, after all, they say, you can't take it with you. Well, the message of our faith is that what we do on earth does go with us. It goes with us for eternity. There are eternal repercussions from everything we do on earth. As Rick Warren says, every act of our lives strikes some chord that will vibrate in eternity. To make the most of our lives, we must keep a vision of eternity continually in our mind and the value of it in our hearts. We must keep a vision of eternity continually in our mind and the value of it in our hearts. Inside the largest bell at the old Sydney post office on Martin Place is a word written in yellow chalk. Someone wrote it there in about 1963. The letter I is almost faded away, almost vanished, but the word eternity can still be seen, written in an elegant copper plate running writing with the tail of the letter Y forming an underlining flourish. The word eternity, written in chalk in this distinctive way that you see up there, was a mystery debated in newspapers and on radio in Sydney for almost 40 years. The word eternity appeared on footpaths over 500,000 times. In 1956, 25 years after the word started to appear regularly on Sydney footpaths, it was discovered that eternity was the evangelistic work of a man named Arthur Stace. Now, Arthur Stace was born in 1884. His mother, father, two brothers and two sisters were all alcoholics. His sisters owned and ran a brothel. At 12, Arthur Stace was made a ward of the state. At 14, he was working in a coal mine, and at 15, he was in jail for the first of many visits. Already, he was well on the way to alcoholism. When he was 26, he attended a meeting for men at an inner city Sydney church. Most of the men were there for a feed, but to get the food, you had to listen to the sermon first. Noticing six tidily dressed people near the front, he asked the man sitting next to him, "Who are they?" And the man said, "I reckon they'd be the Christians." And Arthur said, "Well, look at them and look at us. I'm having a go at what they've got." And he slipped down onto his knees and he prayed. Now, this is hardly a remarkable event, so it would seem, but Arthur found that he was soon able to give up drinking. And he said, "As I got my self-respect back, people were more decent to me." And soon he was also able to get steady employment. Then some months later, Arthur heard a well-known give-em-hell kind of preacher, the Reverend John Ridley. And the preacher said, or I guess he shouted, "I wish I could shout eternity through all the streets of Sydney." Arthur said that the preacher repeated himself and kept shouting, "Eternity, eternity." And his words were ringing through my brain as I left the church. Suddenly I began crying and I felt this powerful call from the Lord to write eternity. I had a piece of chalk in my pocket and I bent down and I wrote it. Arthur, whose limited education had left him barely able to write his own name, found he could write eternity, however, quite elegantly, a metre wide on the footpath. For the next 40 years, Arthur would leave home around 5 o'clock in the morning after an hour's prayer and just go where he felt God directed him to go on that particular day, and he would write the word eternity about every 100 metres or so as he walked along. By 10 o'clock he'd be done and he'd go home. Well, I grew up in Sydney in the 1950s and the Eternity Man was part of my childhood reality. His word became part of Sydney life. When Sydney Square was created in 1977, his word was formed in wrought aluminium and permanently embedded in the square's pebbles. You can also see it these days in the rocks area of Sydney in the ground. And then at the very end of Sydney's half-hour fireworks display on the eve of 2000, there emerged out of the smoke and light the word again, eternity, the hope we have in Jesus Christ being preached to the city and to the whole world. Ironically, the Lonely Planet Guide to Sydney says you would have to die and go to heaven to find a better setting for a city. You would have to die and go to heaven to find a better setting for a city. You and I were made for eternity. I pray that we shall continue to live in the light of this reality. Amen.